Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 43 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month, we have an interview with author A.E. Radley, and you're going to hear the interview I did with her very shortly. But first, let's see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as finding out what's going on in the world of lesfic and what's going on in the world of me in Claire Lydon HQ in Greenwich, London. So first up, the Amazon charts. And topping the charts in the US and the UK is my mate Harper Bliss with her latest book, No Greater Love Than Mine. Now, Harper does like to write books. She loves it. She can't get enough of it. And she just keeps producing books and keeps producing great books, I think. So I haven't read this one, but it's getting some great reviews already. So No Greater Love Than Mine. It's a novella, so shorter than Harper's usual fare. And this is the start of the new Silver Linings series. Now, the book may be shorter, but it's still a Bliss book, which means it's being marketed as emotionally charged and sexy. And I'm sure both those things are very true. The story concerns two older women. Harper does love an older woman who gets a second chance at love. And who doesn't love that, frankly? So if you're a Harper Bliss fan or a second chance romance fan, check that one out. Also doing well in the charts is everyone's favourite situational comedic writer, Robin Alexander. Her new one is called Temporary Girl, and it's the story of Val, who meets Jodie on her friend's bachelorette party. But little does Val know that Jodie does not do commitment. She's a temporary girl. And Val, obviously, is looking for commitment. So how can these two work together? Can Jodie be tamed? Robin Alexander has put together a summer cocktail of friendship, family, secrets, lies, and of course, a large dollop of humour, because it wouldn't be Robin Alexander without a few laughs. I haven't read this one either, but it is Robin Alexander, and she only does brilliant, frankly. So, yes, buy it. You don't need to know anymore. Nicola Pyland is an author who's getting a lot of chart coverage over the last few months, and her latest in her Chicago series, book three in fact, is strangely called Love Walked Into the Lantern. Now that, for reasons known only to Nicola, although it did all come clear when I read the blurb for the book, but Love Walked Into the Lantern sounds like love just, you know, ow, it's got a massive great bump on its head. To go along with the weird title, we have the winners of this month's character name competition. Although kudos to Robin Alexander for naming a character Val. That takes some guts, I'd say. But Nicola Pyland's two leads, one of them's called Summer Taft. Summer Taft, isn't that? That's a character name and a half, isn't it? Her other one's called Lena Tanner. So that's a little bit more, more run-of-the-mill. Lots of N's, though. Lena Tanner. Anyway, Summer is a hotshot billionaire of a tech company, of course she is, and she meets Lena in the Lantern. So now the title becomes clear. The Lantern is a pub or a club or a bar or a restaurant or some kind of arena where these two meet. But neither are the type to embrace love, so they must do the flirty dance moves and the tiptoe around each other before they eventually get it on. So can Summer and Lena score a love that lasts? Can they get over all their insecurities? I hope so, or frankly, I'll be dead sad. And you don't want me dead sad, do you? It's Summer, and the character's called Summer. Let's all get behind a Summer book. Also doing well in the charts is Bridget Essex with her new book, The Wolf Diaries, which is very much out of my comfort zone, being about lesbian werewolves. Generally, anytime the word werewolf is muttered, I hide behind the couch. It's just the way I'm wired. I did watch The Lost Boys, that's dating me, isn't it? Whenever that came out, probably in the late 80s. And that was, you know, it was about werewolves. That wasn't that scary, though. I think that was kind of a YA werewolf. I maybe I'm getting werewolves mixed up with vampires, actually. I don't really know what werewolves do. Vampires are the ones that suck your blood. I don't know what werewolves do. Do they give you a bear hug? Like a werewolf hug? I don't know. Let me know, listeners. Anyway, the werewolf in Bridget Essex's The Wolf Diaries, it has a big heart and she's called Jaden. And she meets a woman called Tess in a coffee shop. And I'm assuming that Jaden is out of her werewolf gear at this point, or that would be weird when you're just standing there with a coffee and then a werewolf comes up and you just get chatting. You can tell this is like weirding my mind, can't you? So Tess has just been dumped by her fiance, and when she sees Jaden, presumably out of werewolf garb, she asks her to pretend to be her girlfriend and kiss her, and Jaden agrees because Tess is H-A-W-T hot. But then the pair carry on the fake girlfriend thing to keep up the charade until, oopsie, Jaden the werewolf has fallen in love. Now, I don't know how these books go, so maybe I should read one because I am intrigued. I mean, is there werewolf sex? I do remember reading an excerpt of a book once where when the person had sex, it was a bloke at this point, when the guy had sex, he turned into a werewolf. I don't know how it works. I should read it, shouldn't I? Because clearly Bridget Essex, I know, is I'm fairly sure I'm saying that this is not her first werewolf book, and she clearly writes them very well because she has a big market and she's doing really well, so good for Bridget. Finally, Anna Stone's book Being Hers is also pleasing readers on both sides of the Atlantic. It's the tale of Melanie and Vanessa and their journey into BDSM and love. One reviewer described it as 50 Shades of Insecurity, which tickled me. So if you like your books with a little bit more kink, this is the book for you. And that's the chart roundup for July 2018. So what's been going on since we last spoke? Well, quite a lot. Quite a lot, dear listener. I recorded the last podcast before I went away on holiday, so that was like in May. So it's been 6 weeks since I've chatted with you. So first up, let's talk about the news from the world of lesfic. Now, the first weekend of July 2018 saw the Golden Crown Literary Society hand out its gongs in Las Vegas, which certainly provided all the razzle-dazzle needed, as well as headache-inducing carpets. All the photos I saw coming out of GCLS, they have conference rooms in whichever hotel it was in. And these carpets, they had massive swirling circles on the design. And that's all I saw. Like, every photo, the carpets just jumped out at you and gave you a headache. So I can't imagine what it was like being there, like on some psychedelic trip the whole time. Now, the GCLS, they've got their knockers. I don't enter awards on, by and large. I find them too stressful, asking people all the time for votes. And I have done a couple, but I do find them quite stressful. Anyway, but the GCLS is on every year. And I don't enter this one because you have to pay to enter it, and I'm not really down with that. Also, I don't think they're very welcoming to independent authors, and I am an independent author, so I decide to give it a miss most years. However, they did give a couple of awards out to indie books, but they need to really open the awards up more widely, I think. However, if you want a snapshot of books that are set out from mainly all big publishers of lesfic, Bella Books, Bold Strokes, Bywater, all those ones beginning with B, then this is the place to look. And there are frankly a ton of winners. So to see them all, head over to goldencrown.org. But the headlines for the winners, I will give you some headlines, are as follows. So the first one is R.J. Samuel, for An Outsider Inside, won the Anne Bannum Popular Choice Award. So well done indeed to R.J. Samuel, who is an indie author. So really pleased for her on that one. And I must get R.J. on the podcast, actually, talk about that one, because it sounds like a really interesting book too. So contemporary romance this time around was, I'm not sure if this happened last year, but it seems new to me. They split it into three categories: short, mid-length and long. So Jenny Frame, who's been on this podcast a couple of episodes ago, won one of the books for her book Unexpected. So well done, Jenny. For mid-length, Night Voice by CJ Frizzle, got a gong. Right Here, Right Now, former podcast guest Georgia Beers, well done Georgia. Sidebar by Carson Tate and The Butterfly Whisperer by Lisa Moreau. So that's four winners in that category, so well done to all them. And Contemporary Romance Long are three winners who've all been on the podcast and are all super lovely. So well done to those three. They were Perfect Rhythm by Jay, Vacation Land by Susan X Maher, always get her name wrong, and Who'd Have Thought by Jay Benson. That's a hybrid of Jay Benson. Maybe I'll ask them that at Elcon if they've ever thought of being a hybrid author. Who'd Have Thought by G Benson. Now I have waxed lyrical about G Benson before. She's one of my favorite lesbian authors, and Who'd Have Thought was a terrific book too. I also read Perfect Rhythm by Jay, which I enjoyed. I haven't read Vacation Land, but I must, because Susan X Maher is a brilliant person and a brilliant author. Debut novels went to Bend by Nancy J. Hedden, Frame by Frame by C.J. Murphy, Marriage of a Thousand Lies by S.J. Sindow, and The Road to Wings by Julie Tizard. The gong for general fiction went to Anne McMahon for Goldenrod. Anne McMahon wins these all the time, so I must read an Anne McMahon book. And Ashley Bartlett for The Price of Cash. If Erotica Floats Your Boat, Megan O'Brien for her book Her Best Friend's Sister won the gong. Justine Saracen won for The Sniper's Kiss in historical fiction. If you're after mystery or thriller, Anne Apteker won for Genuine Gold, and Anne's been on the podcast before and she was great. And Claire McNabb won for Lethal Care. I'm just going down the list now. Science fiction and fantasy, Erased by Robbie McCoy, Shattered by Lee Winter, and Spark by Catherine Friend. So if you want the full list, as I said, go to www.goldencrown.org. And you can stock up on books and see what you think of them. Do you agree with the GCLS decisions? Also, if you're in the UK or Europe, don't forget that the European Lesfic Literary Convention, or ELCON to its mates, takes place in Bristol on August the 23rd and 24th. There's going to be panels, discussions, readings and workshops. So if Lesfic is your bag, head on over to elconmeet.org for tickets and more details. And I will be there both days. And I'm chairing a panel on Lesfic, on tropes in Lesfic. And I'm taking part in one talking about collaboration. Finally, what have I been up to over the past month since we last spoke? Well, quite a lot. In professional news for I Am Ever the Professional, I launched my latest novel, The London of Us, in late June, which is book four in the London Romance series. Now, I'm really, really pleased to get this one out because I actually finished it in March, but then I had to wait while Audible recorded the audio so we could all launch ebook, print and audio together. So if you are an audio fan, please do go and listen to an audio, because the narrator, Lucy Price Lewis, is really terrific. And weirdly, my friend knows her, so it's a very small world. My friend went on a hen weekend with Lucy. So, yeah, she's got a great voice and is very a brilliant narrator. Really brings the story to life. And this one concentrates on the story of Alice and her late blooming coming out as she meets Rachel and has to navigate the choppy waters of, you know, what's going on in her life now, and can she cope with it, and how's she going to tell everyone in her life that she's not got a boyfriend anymore but she's got a girlfriend. I really did enjoy writing this one. I think it's my best book yet. I know I always say that every time I bring one out, but I really do think this is great. It's emotional. That sounds like I'm bragging, doesn't it? But it's very emotional and it's very heartfelt. So, and all the reviews I'm getting back, I'll say the same thing. In fact, I got a really lovely review on the Lesbian Review, on Le Revoir, and quite a few other different blogs. So thank you to everyone who's read it and reviewed it. I also got a brilliant review on Amazon, which said that my book should be available on prescription for as an antidepressant. So that's really lovely. So thank you to the reviewer for that. But yeah, do give it a try in ebook, print or audio. And let me know what you think. I'm currently working on book 5 in that series, London. Actually, that's going to be the last book, so a 5-book series, and I hope to have that completed this year. And after that, I'll be working on a couple of non-fiction projects I have in the works, as well as picking up a book I started earlier in the year, so it is all go. In personal news, my wife and I spent most of June on the road visiting Toronto, Boston and Cape Cod, which was all sorts of awesome. We were away for 3.5 weeks, so it really did feel like we had a great break. We took in the wedding of one of my nieces in Toronto, and then we stayed at a Canadian lake house the week after that, which was like being in Dawson's Creek. It was pretty awesome and super relaxing. Being somewhere without Wi-Fi, I've decided no Wi-Fi means relaxation. And of course, we had a great stay in Boston as well. And when we were in Cape Cod, we got a ferry over to Martha's Vineyard and hired some bikes and rode around that. It nearly killed my wife, but it was a fantastic day. And also, of course, we spent a weekend in Provincetown, which was as good as everyone had told us. And also, one of the gayest places I've ever been to, and I've been to some gay places. I've never walked down a street and seen so many gay people and so many couples holding hands, which is really lovely to see. We loved staying in Provincetown. We had fantastic weather. We stayed in a great guest house. We chilled by the pool and just hung out and watched the World Cup and, yeah, just hung out. It was really cool. So now we've been back a month already, and in that time I've launched a book, and England have nearly won the World Cup, but last night we went out to Croatia 2-1. Oh well, but we did get further than anyone expected. So at the moment the country is full of bonhomie and joy, and I really do feel like it's brought us together in a time when, you know, the politics in the world is going bonkers in America and in the UK. So well done, football. Well done, the England football team. But now it's going to be back to normal very soon. And there's always 2022 for us to win the World Cup, right? In Qatar, with temperatures of 40 plus degrees. What could possibly go wrong? Anyway, I know some of my listeners are in America and go, the World Cup? What? Football or soccer to you? So anyway, now let's get on to the interview with the fabulous A.E. Radley. I hope you enjoy. So joining me today on the Lesbian Book Club podcast, we've got UK author A.E. Radley, who is the author of a fair few books already, including most recently Bring Holly Home, upcoming The Road Ahead, and most famously the Flight series. Amanda lives in the Midlands with her wife and cat and describes herself as a traveller, tea drinker and biscuit eater extraordinaire, which in my experience all go together famously well. So welcome, Amanda.
Thank you very much.
And have you eaten any biscuits or drunk any tea today?
Oh, I've drunk tons of tea. I haven't eaten any biscuits. I feel like I've let the side down a bit.
You must
remember. I've eaten some chocolate though.
Well, okay, that's all right. What's your favourite biscuit?
Digestive. I have to go classic.
Digestive.
Yeah, honestly, classic and boring. Yeah. I know, but you can't beat it.
Oh, you see, my wife would agree with you, but I think it's a lot of calories for a bit of a dull biscuit. That's always my thing with digestive.
Now, you sound just like my wife. My wife recently went out and bought a box set, like, of different flavour biscuits, because in Emma's world, there's nothing better than a box set of chocolate or biscuits.
There's a box set of biscuits? Where's this?
Amazing, Tesco. Amazing. She just came up with them. I was like, thank you. And I just swept up all the shortbreads and the digestives, and I was quite happy. And off she went with her sort of more fancy biscuits.
There you go, you see. You're a match made in heaven, clearly. Biscuit
Absolutely.
Heaven. Biscuit heaven, at least. So tell listeners where you're sitting today. What can you see from where you're sitting?
Well, I'm in my office, in my house. I work from home. And if I look out the window, I can see, well, the rest of the houses really around here. I used to have a gorgeous view of the hills and countryside surrounding Stoke-on-Trent. And I enjoyed that for about 3 months until they popped up a house nearby. And now I can just see that house. But if I stand up and move around, I can kind of see a little bit of greenery.
Oh, it's sad, isn't it? Is it a nice house to look at? Or
Not really.
Anything interesting ever go on in that house?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, I think they kind of, all of our windows are tinted because we live quite close to each other, so I think people don't realize that when they have their light on you can see in. So yeah, they have a fantastically interesting life, and I do sit here probably a little bit more than I should watching them or what they're doing rather than actually writing.
I do remember that. I used to live in Bath, and I used to live in this big block of flats, and it sort of curved like an L shape. So when you were sitting watching the telly, you could quite often see into this bedroom of this couple on the L bit, and they were always having sex, always with the curtains open and always with the light full shine.
Not shy then.
No, they made everybody else in the block feel very inadequate. So,
but absolutely,
it was something interesting when there was nothing on the telly. So that's good.
We should have had a whip round, get them some curtains or something.
Yeah, no one wanted to stop it. You know, it was a good thing when people came around to visit. Do you want to see the neighbours? You know. So getting back to getting away from voyeurism and getting back to you and your writing journey. So tell me a bit about how you got started on that.
Well, I started writing fan fiction, and I never had any intention or desire really to be a published author. I think I've been writing fan fiction on and off for 10-15 years, mainly off. And then I got writing one particular fandom, and I wrote quite a few long stories, which were pretty well received, luckily. And then one day out of the blue, I was contacted by the owner of Ilfa Publishing, and she asked me if I wanted to publish Flight SQA-016, which I wish I hadn't named that because that got quite complicated. And I nearly said no, but I discussed it with my wife after a while. I agreed to do it. So that's kind of how it all started.
And how long ago was that then?
That was published in March 2016.
Okay. So you published that one with Ilva, but then since then you've gone independently published.
The Flight and Grounded were both published with Ilva because the Flight fan fiction was enormous and there was no way it could be condensed into one book.
Right.
So we split it into two, into Flight and Grounded. I published with both of them with Ilva, and then everything after that was independently published.
Right. And so what was the Flight series? Let's talk a little bit about it. What was it fan fiction of?
The TV show Once Upon a Time. It's an American show, not many Brits know about it, but it got very, very popular, and the two sort of lead characters way back when were in series one very, very clearly queer-baited, queer-coded, and the show went in a bit of a direction where they ended up kind of hating each other and spending no time together because the fandom loved that, and they just got bigger and bigger and bigger, so it's called Swan Queen. I think the fact that they forced the couple apart just encouraged the fandom to grow and grow and grow. So I think it's one of the fandoms out there, aside from sort of Twilight or whatever, which has one of the biggest fandoms.
Right. Okay. So you're saying I do kind of understand fan fiction now, but before I started writing in lesbian, I'd never heard of fan fiction, and so somebody has explained it to me, and and Swan Queen. Was that their names, the names of the characters, or is that just a different, something different?
Yeah, there's always a clever person who quite early on in the show comes up with sort of pairing names. So Swan Queen comes from Emma Swan, and Regina Mills, who is the evil queen,
right,
from fairy tales. So okay. Became Swan Queen. But there can be all kinds of things. Sometimes they're a mashup of people's actual names. Sometimes they're more of a mashup of their character or something about them, like their job or something. But
right.
Swan Queen was this one.
Okay. So is this series still going on? This Once Upon a Time, or is it all over?
It's just finished. It's very recently finished. It was. It's kick-started my career, so I should love it, but I utterly hate it. It became so badly written. The first series is fantastic, and I absolutely encourage people to watch it. It's a fantastic first series, but it's very easy to get hooked into it, and then you watch the second series, which is okay, and then the third series gets very confusing. But then from, I can't remember, it's seven or eight series, far too many is basically the answer, but from series two, it became a disaster. Like, literally, my wife and I have a drinking game where every time they can't figure out their own timelines or there's an enormous plot hole, we take a drink, and we're generally drunk before the opening credits.
So if nothing else, it serves a purpose for that.
Absolutely.
So you wrote the fan fiction from that, and then was Journey's End, was that as well from that, or was that just taken then further on from the first two books?
Yeah, Journey's End was completely original work. And in fact, Flight has some original scenes in it, and Grounded sort of starts in the fandom, in the fanfic verse, but then it becomes original work. Because when I was writing the fanfic, obviously I had no idea it was going to be published, so I kind of went off on a bit of a tangent and went all over the shop and didn't really care what I was doing, didn't really make much sense. But when you come to edit that, you find out that, you know, sometimes these things aren't going to work in a book. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think probably maybe the first third of Grounded is from the fandom, and then the rest of it is original work, and then Journey's End is completely original work after the events that happened in the fanfic.
Right, okay. And so is there a lot of fanfiction around that particular series?
Oh, absolutely, tons. Yeah. Absolutely. There's like tens of thousands of stories out there. Mm. With sort of varying levels of skill. But Swan Queen, I mean, I've written in other fandoms as well. I've written with Star Trek Voyager, which is where I met my wife, actually, and the film Devil Wears Prada, things like that. They've got quite big sort of lesbian fandoms. Mm. But Swan Queen is absolutely huge, and there's a weirdly large number of very talented authors who've all got pulled into this one particular fandom.
Right.
Which is really fantastic. There's so many great stories in there. So quite a few of them have been sort of pulled out and turned into books now as well. Uh-huh. So I'm definitely not alone.
No. I mean, I know that...
Small and growing.
Yes. I've heard of the term Swan Queen before, you see. A very kind reader of mine, when I just said, I kind of understand fan fiction. And I do, essentially. But I think my issue is that I don't really watch that much telly. And I certainly don't watch all these different US shows like I watch, you know, certain ones, but not that much. And I don't really read anything that's not in a published book. So, yeah, it wasn't really for me. But
No, definitely not. You're not alone. Loads of people have no idea what it is. Like when I have reviewers say that, you know, this I loved this when it was a fanfic. And then I have another reviewer who will contact me and go, what's a fanfic?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, that's a big question.
I do feel like I have to really explain it on every episode. But then I think I'm not sure if I totally understand it. But, you know, I think that listeners to this show have heard me stumble over it many times. So if they really want to know, they can find out and Google it.
Go to fanfiction.net and literally lose hours of your life.
Yeah. I have been on there, but it all looks a bit sort of a bit overwhelming.
I think if you start with a TV show, you know it's okay.
I think I did really go on there too for the Gilmore Girls. I don't know if you ever watched that.
Yes, I did. Yes,
I love the Gilmore Girls, and so, you know, obviously everybody wanted Rory and Paris to get together. So I'm sure there are stories about that.
Yeah, I think I've read some actually. Yeah, it does seem familiar. But yeah, I mean, you name it. Across TV shows as well. I mean, there's always that random one person who plucks someone from one TV show and someone from a completely different TV show and goes, these two work together, and decides to write a, you know, 30,000 word story on it.
Oh, so you can go across TV shows as well.
Oh yeah.
Oh my goodness.
You'll be reading something about the Gilmore Girls, for example, and suddenly like Frasier Crane will appear.
So you've just named two of my favourite shows. So, you know,
that'd be great.
So you did a series for obviously the Flight series. And then you've gone on to write a few standalone books, right? And I think probably the perceived wisdom, never get that right, is to write a series. So any reason for you, you know, jumping and then writing a few standalone books?
None at all. I just did it, really.
Okay, I thought there was a master plan.
No, I wish I had one. When I was writing Grounded, I kind of had an idea for Huntress, what ended up being Huntress, and I thought, I'll write that, and it just ended up being the book that I wrote, and then I kind of thought, maybe I should have continued the Flight series, or written a romance, because Huntress is such a blend of categories. It's certainly not a right-to-market kind of project. It's comedy, crime, cosy, mystery, romance, is a bit of everything. So like it's sold well, but it doesn't really appeal to one particular category. It sits across too many, so that was a bad idea. And then I went on to write a romance, which was again a standalone romance that I just wanted to write, and since then I've kind of been writing more standalone things. I then obviously I released Journey's End, which was a continuation of the Flight series, but the Flight series is a bit of a strange one because a lot of people will buy it because it was a fan fiction, and I guarantee you that at least a third of the people who've bought it have bought it, stuck it on the shelf, and never read it. Right. It's more the sort of the fact that it's now real, it's tangible. That's why they own it. And they've given it actually to the lead actress in the show in Once Upon a Time and asked her to sign it. And that's been on Snapchat a few times. And whenever it does, my sales go up straight after because then everybody wants a copy because she's been filmed with it and signed it.
How? So, oh, my God. Yeah, that's pretty cool though, right?
But it's happened a couple of times, and both times it's happened, I've just been having a quiet afternoon, you know, whatever, eating some biscuits, drinking tea probably. And then suddenly my social media is completely blown up with like thousands of people going, oh my God, have you seen this? Lana signed your book, you're on Snapchat, blah, blah, blah. And it's just incredible when it happens because it's just some really lovely fan who's taken a paperback copy of the book along to a convention and asked her to sign it. And in the second one, I did actually say, I dedicated it to Lana, who's the name of the evil queen. And I actually said, if you want to pop this on Snapchat as well, feel free. Because I thought, let's be cheeky. And she did. So that's my marketing tip of the week.
It always pays to be cheeky. That's for sure. Yeah, and you should just send copies to all the lead actors, clearly. that would be a great marketing move.
Absolutely. That's my next thing. I need to write more about shows. But I mean, with series, I do have another one coming out which could be converted into a series, which is coming out in August. But no, I mean, I do agree that the wisdom should be to write series. And I think if I hadn't started off in fandom, I probably would have gone down that route. And I could have really weaved all of my standalone books into an epic sort of series now with a sort of, you know, variety cast of characters, but I just thought that was a lot of work, really.
Yeah, it is. And I'm on the fence, I have to say. I've got series and I've got standalones, and I like writing both. And I think readers do like a standalone as well. It's not a bad thing. And let's talk about Huntress, because you published that and I read that and I really enjoyed it. As you said, it's kind of a madcap comic caper, and does kind of straddle a few different genres. And the scene on the canal boat with the protagonist and the hunter, honestly, one of the funniest things I've read in a while. I was literally crying. I really was. So what was the inspiration for that? Has something similar, obviously you haven't been being chased, but have you had an incident on a canal boat?
I haven't had an incident on a canal boat, but we do actually live right next to one. We live right next to the canal, and the quickest route to our big local park is walking along the canal routes. So one day I was walking along in the morning, and there was a man driving. Do you drive an arrowboat? No, steering, whatever. He's an arrowboat.
One of those.
And sitting there, whatever. Looking manly, looking important and manly. Mm-hmm. And there was a woman walking up the path in front of me, and she must have been about 300 years old, and her dog, who was equally ancient, and they could barely walk, they were so slow. And I didn't really mind because I was so far back, I thought I'll overtake them, but it'll be in a while. And it just, as I was watching, I realised this man on this narrowboat couldn't overtake them. And they were walking so slowly, and he just looked so despondent. Bless him, you could see like he was just wanting to cry because he had this boat in the water with this engine, you know, that he paid a lot of money for, presumably. You know, the going price of a narrowboat. But, you know, and there he was being outrun by this extremely old lady who clearly had problems with her hips. And it just made me laugh. And I thought, this is ridiculous. There you are. It must be the most ridiculous mode of transport in the world. And I thought how funny it would be to have like narrowboat races. And then obviously narrowboat chases, and that's where that came from, really. I often think about them. And
it was honestly one of the funniest scenes I've read, so well done.
Thank you, I'm really glad.
And obviously there's comedy flowing through your book, so with your comedic scenes and sparky dialogue, so is comedy something that just you include in all your writing, or is it something that you're more intentional about?
I think it just happens. I love to laugh and I love making people laugh. My family's always been very funny and it's always just been a part of my life. And we're one of those families who very much are sort of like inappropriately laughing at funerals and things like that. So it's always been a part of sort of my life, and therefore it goes into my books. And I think sometimes I write things and I kind of naturally think of a bit of a joke and put that in and then think, no, that's the wrong place to have humour and I have to take it out again. So I think if anything I'm trying to remove some of the humour sometimes, because I'm aware that maybe my sense of humour is maybe not correctly timed to everyone else's. But yeah, I think it's a it's just something that's happened. No matter what book I write, it ends up being, you know, whatever, a romance and a comedy, or a crime and a comedy. There's always that kind of element in there.
Mm-hmm. And I do actually think that comedy is the biggest draw. Humour is the biggest draw in any book. So if you can include it in there, it's always gonna go down better with the audience, I think. And obviously there's I'm gonna get my words out. The Road Ahead is your upcoming release, which I read and enjoyed for this podcast. And there's a massive thunderstorm going on, by the way, outside.
So. Yeah, I just heard that. Wow. Are you okay?
So I'm okay. London is about to be swept away, but I'm okay. So The Road Ahead, it's coming out in June, I think you said. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and that's got a bit of comedy again, but it's a much gentler road trip. But again, it's a road trip. You had a road trip in Huntress, so you clearly have a thing for road trips. Is that the case?
Yeah, I do. I mean, flight came from the fact me and my wife went on a first-class flight, and I thought, this is fascinating, so I write about it. And The Road Ahead is... I lived in Spain for a year, and when I came back, I decided to drive rather than fly. So I drove from Alicante to Manchester, which I don't recommend. It's a very long way. Don't do it. Mm. But part of that is obviously the journey from Portugal to London. So I'd driven it, and I always thought this would be great to go in a book at some point. And I did get pulled over by the police, like they did. They can be very, very snippy in France. But yeah, just things like that. Just sort of, I always think, I wonder about this. And whenever I fill my car up with fuel, it always tells me how many miles I have left until I run out of fuel again. It's just like 396 miles. And I often sit there and go, I wonder how far I could get. How far is 396 miles? I lived in Hastings once and I thought, I can definitely get to France, but how far?
Yeah, you definitely could have done. Although, you know, yeah, you'd have to gone some way in a tunnel or a bridge or... Yeah,
and to be honest, I had milk in the car, and I didn't really.
You didn't want, you know, yeah.
You can't start that kind of epic journey with milk in the car.
And also, one thing that struck me reading Huntress and reading the reviews for your latest book, Bring Holly Home, and reading The Road Ahead, was the lack of sex. So let's talk about sex. Now, most romance books, I know they're not all of them absolute romance books, but most lesbian books, I suppose, with a bit of romance in, have a bit of sex in them as well. And The Road Ahead barely has a kiss, and reading the reviews for Bring Holly Home, there's not a lot in there. So tell me a bit about your decision to not write sex scenes. And is that general across all your other books as well?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think I was always told, I was informed when I started, that all lesfic books in general must contain romance and they must contain sex. And I wasn't really sure that was true. And I remember I read a gritty crime book where, I'm paraphrasing here, but where a body was found. My some horrified relative, like in chapter 13. In chapter 14, the person who found the body is completely over it and happy banging the detective who came to interview them, which I thought was rather strange and took me out of the sort of crime side of the story. I think that instruction that all books must have romance in, all lesbian books must have romance in, is quite damaging to authors, because I think a lot of mainstream readers wouldn't really gel with that. And I was also told that sex scenes were a must, and I just didn't feel comfortable. I literally got told, you know, at one point, where to crowbar a sex scene in, and I thought, well, that just doesn't really feel natural to me, and I don't like being told what to do, so I decided to not write them in Flight Grounded and Huntress. Huntress was a sort of crime book, so as far as I'm concerned, it's not really a romance, and it doesn't sort of fit in there. I actually started getting emails from people saying, thank you so much for not including sex in your books, because I feel that I can actually recommend them to friends, I can read it on the bus without going bright red, you know. And I really expected that I would actually not sell, and I'm sure some people avoid my books because they don't have sex in. But I actually got quite a few nice comments from people saying, like, I'm so glad I can actually recommend this to my daughter and things like that. So that's sort of one of the reasons. I think the other reason is because I quite often write slow burn romances. So when I was writing fan fiction, it would be like chapter 91 or whatever before they even kissed. So that's just sort of naturally what I do. And I think if I did sort of, you know, carry on to writing a sex scene, the book would be like 900 pages long. So it just sort of ends up being, that's where I kind of go, oh, that'll do. Finish the story.
Oh, that's really interesting, actually, because I think I've always wanted to write sex scenes, I suppose. I think, but there again, I do write pure romance novels, so
I think that's a big difference. I think if you write pure romance, then you have to put it in there, you know, somewhere, because it's a part of the story.
Yeah.
Mergers and Acquisitions was sort of an office-based story, sort of like a comedic office-based story with romance in there. Bring Holly Home was more about that story. The Road Ahead was kind of a romance, but was sort of more about other things. And I think it's because I don't really write pure romance, which I do need to stop doing, to be honest. Sometimes I kind of write a book and go, what is this? It's a romance, I don't know. And, you know, you're trying to put it in categories on Amazon, go, I don't know, you don't have one for me.
Yeah, because I think it's an oft discussed topic, isn't it, in lesbian fiction forums and Facebook groups. How much sex do you want? Do you want sex? And there's always quite a lot of people say it doesn't matter, and I never believe them. No. To be honest, but I think, like you say, maybe it is because you don't write pure romance and therefore it's not absolutely necessary. But it's interesting that you're getting emails from people saying that they the reasons why they like it, that there's nothing in there, so they can share it and give it to other people, which is something I know is a concern for people, I suppose.
I think especially if you have like an elderly relative who really wants to read your book.
Yeah.
I mean, like, my wife's family loves to read my books, and I just have this mental image of like my mother-in-law sitting there reading a sex scene, and I'm like, no, no, that can't happen.
You see, I'm just like, hey, everyone, come in and read them, because I do remember very clearly my nephew, his wife, her gran read it, and at their wedding she came up to me and she said, oh, I'd really love your books. And I was like, okay, good. But my parents have both read one of my books, so we didn't talk about it afterwards.
Well, you see, that's it. My parents would want to talk about it, or like, you know, it would just be awkward.
Yeah.
But I think especially with as I say, with my wife's family, they're absolutely lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very much like, oh, we love your books. And especially because I haven't had a sex scene to date, I think it would be quite a shock if suddenly they, you know, cracked open the new copy and just the mental image of it is making me laugh. They'd be like sort of putting that down, putting it to the side.
So we're going to look out though, right, for your first full-on romance and your first sex scene. We'll make a big song and dance about it, okay?
Absolutely. Yeah. I can get you to do a reading.
Oh god, no, that would be my idea of that would be my nightmare vision, having to read out a sex scene. I can write them, but I'm not sure about acting them out.
Yeah, I saw on YouTube someone was doing a lesbian author reading, and I thought, oh, I'll click on that. The window was open, so it's quite hot here, and yeah, they launched straight into a sex scene. I thought, well, first brave, and secondly, let me just get the window.
Yeah, it's very brave. I have seen a few writers do it at readings I've been at, and you know, I full respect for them, but I would never do it. So as well as writing though, you're also very active in the lesbian community on various boards, and you set up Lesbian Corporation Forum or something like that, is that right?
It's a competition, which is cooperation and competition.
Cooperation and competition, okay, cooperation. And what was the plan behind setting that up?
I think it's because when I sort of first started, I didn't really know very many other authors, and the ones I did know at the time just wanted to advertise their own books and had no interest in talking to anyone else. And I thought, well, I can't be the only person who wants to talk about my work, because it's kind of, you know, other authors are work colleagues in a way, you know, they're not competition.
Mm.
And I've, you know, readers don't buy one book a year. We're not in competition with each other. Reader loves to buy as many books as they possibly can. So I think it's good to work together. And
completely.
I have a marketing background, and I know a lot of people hate marketing. It can be expensive and time consuming if you get it wrong. So I kind of wanted to start finding similar people who wanted to sort of help out. And there's a lot of people who I saw them in sort of more mainstream groups, sort of trying to talk up amongst all the people who sort of writing like their dystopian science fiction and whatever. So we're going, all right, lesbian romance, and just tumbleweed going by. I thought, if I can get all of us together, we can actually, like, benefit each other.
Mm.
And it's been really helpful because I learn things, because there's obviously people who have been writing a lot longer than I have.
Mm.
And I can also share things. I can sort of talk about my experience in marketing and things that I've learned. And it's such a changeable market. Things that were true last year aren't true this year, and things that are true in mainstream, if you research something, you know, you might think, oh, this is the way it must be done, this is the way pricing must be done. But we're such a different market, and I think getting together and sort of getting all of our information together benefits everyone. It means we produce better books, we release them better, we market them better, and that's better for all of us and better for the readers. So it's been really, really useful to do.
I agree, and I do agree with you that everything, all the perceived received, which one is it, the received wisdom of how to market a book and how to launch a book and all that doesn't really hold true for our genre, I don't think, quite a lot of it. And so it is good to see how what's working for other people in the same genre, for sure. And also, of course, as well as writing books, you've set up your own publishing company and are publishing other people as well. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so how is that going, and how do you fit in that part of it with the you writing as well?
With great difficulty, we decided to set up Heartsome Publishing just for myself and my wife originally. And then we started talking to friends who also wanted to be published. And we said, you know, well, you need to do this. And their eyes glazed over and sort of decided that was quite complicated. So we thought, well, we could sort of set up a publishing company. We've recently been through it all ourselves. We know how to do it. I know the marketing side of things, which is... I think the marketing side of things is something that so many people expect their publisher to do, but no publisher actually does.
No.
I mean, if you go to any traditional publishing company right now, they will ask you what your social media presence is like. Do you have an email marketing list? You know, even, you know, the top five, they will obviously market your book for you, but they need to know what you can do, because so much of it's author-led. No matter how big an author you are, how small an author you are, you must have your own marketing strategy. So one of the things I wanted to do was be able to help people with that and help them from an author side as well as a publisher side. So actually say to them, look, I can't do this as a publisher because, you know, it's irrelevant. If your, you know, publisher starts tweeting about something, no one really cares, but, you know, they do care if you do. So to try to give them that advice. So we only have two other authors on board at the moment, and we're sort of trying to keep things quite small and quite manageable, because one of the things we're offering is sort of a lot more guidance and time. We're not trying to sort of be in the big leagues. We're not trying to be the next Bulstrokes. We have no desire to sort of be huge. It's more about sort of like maintaining what we're doing now and trying to assist people on a more of a grassroots level. And I think as well, because I'm passionate about being an independent author, that clashes quite a lot with also being a publisher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
two very different roles.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, my advice to any wannabe author would be to be independent. I would not really recommend anyone go down the publisher route unless there were very specific sort of things in place. They couldn't afford to properly edit, or they didn't understand the process. They wanted someone to help them and handhold them. Then, you know, that's a very different process. So yeah, it's one of those things that it's not something we're going to grow, but it is something that we continue to use for our current authors and for our own books as well.
Okay, so you stumbled into it, but you're quite happy where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, you mentioned your wife and her love of fancy biscuits. Your wife is Emma Sterney Radley, who also writes in the genre. And so along with Harper Bliss and her missus, I think you two are up there vying for the title of the Posh and Becks of the indie lesbian world. So how do you feel about that?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, when do we, I mean, who's Posh and who's Becks, though, first?
I can't say. Only you can answer those questions.
That's true. Well, I mean, we're gonna have to have a conversation at Elcon, clearly, and try and get this all sorted out.
Yeah, you two work it out. Bring the biscuit box, and we'll work it out there. But how does that does Emma write full time as well now?
She does. Yeah,
she does. So you're both working at home. How does that work day to day?
Oh, it's brilliant. We're joined at the hip anyway. Like, we're one of those rare couples that we don't really like spending time apart. which works really well because otherwise we would have killed each other by now. And it's great because although we work together, we work on different projects. So, like, you know, we both work in publishing. It's ever evolving and we're always learning. So, you know, we both go off and sort of read our own books about, you know, craft and about publishing. And we do online courses together and things like that. And then we go off and write our own books. We have Monday morning meeting with biscuits and tea, obviously, where we sort of discuss where we're both up to. So we do work quite separately, but then, you know, we can come together and sort of have conversations about things we've learned and things we've discovered. So yeah, it works really, really well.
Yeah, that's really good, actually, because I've just released a book with Harper Bliss, and I just was chatting to her this morning about it, and how brilliant it was, actually, the whole process to write with somebody else. I know you guys aren't writing a book together, but it's just nice because writing is a very solitary job, isn't it? It was just nice to have somebody to chat to as well as write with. But it was nice just to chat to another writer every day, which we did every day we were writing together. And I'm sure you have that every day. So, you're one up on us.
Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic to be able to sort of have that conversation and, you know, I mean, Emma's writing her projects, I'm writing mine.
Yeah.
But she's a lot more about craft and I'm a lot more about business. My background's marketing. So, you know, I'll be saying to her, well, if you're going to be doing that giveaway for paperback, she might want to do it this way. And she'll be saying, when you're, you know, structuring your story, have you considered doing this? So we bring different strengths to it. So it really works out very well.
Okay. And you said that you were in marketing before, but are you doing full-time writing and publishing now?
Nearly. I run a digital marketing agency, and we're in the process of selling it, so I'm doing the sort of handover now. So I'm kind of working on that probably about 30-40% of my time, and the rest of it's writing. Then once that goes, it won't be full-time writing. I still maintain a couple of clients, but nearly full-time writing, shall we say.
Okay, so you're still got your quite almost one foot in the marketing pond. And do you have any mantras you use in your writing process? Have you got anything stuck on your wall to inspire you?
No, I'm really pragmatic. I'm just sort of like crack on with it, just get it done. I'm not someone who needs, like, you know, their favorite music on while staring out the window at, you know, you the don't... lake or something in a comfy chair with my writing socks. I just get on with it.
I would like that image, you know. I always hear the writers who put on a certain piece of clothing and light a candle and stuff. I don't do that either, but I quite like the thought of it.
I'd love to do it. Yeah. I'd love to sort of have like my perfect writing spot, you know, to sort of prepare and get everything right, but I don't know what it would be, and I think I'd spend so much time messing around trying to get it all right, I wouldn't actually do anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Sort of, that's the wrong candle.
I can't find the right candle.
That's not cranberry, damn it. How can I write now?
So since coming into sort of taking this on and sort of bringing it up to at least 50% of what you're doing, what do you find is your favourite thing about writing?
I think my favourite thing is that moment when you read something back that you've written and you just know it works. It doesn't happen often, for me at least, but when you just read something back and you go, yes, that works. I'm actually doing something that works here. I'm an author.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't happen like all the time. I'm not going to sort of sit here and say I'm marvellous, but, you know, now and then you read back a sentence, you think, yeah, that was great, that works, and it's just such a nice feeling. And I think that happens more and more the more you learn about your craft and the more you learn about sort of how to structure a book, because, you know, we're all always learning. There's so much to learn, and, you know, you pick up hints and tips from people, and sort of, you know, as that happens, it's just such a fantastic feeling.
I totally agree with that one. What do you find the hardest thing about doing it?
Proofreading my own work. Yeah. I am terrible at proofreading and I hate doing it. I'm very much one of these people who reads what should be there rather than what is there. I can read the same sentence 10 times and I will read it how it should be rather than how it is. So for me, proofreading is just a complete waste of my time and I absolutely loathe it.
Do you farm it out then?
I do, yeah.
That's a good thing to do. I've got the thing now where on my second draft, I put it onto my Kindle and go to the gym, and then sort of I'm on the treadmill when I'm reading it, so I get all my steps done at the same time. So I always feel quite chuffed with myself at that point.
You must feel very pleased with yourself. Done my steps, done my approval.
But I'm awful. My Achilles heel is leaving out little words, so like words like to and as and of and at.
Mine's adding them in. For some reason, I like to add in, rather than like someone gets off a swing, I always put off of a swing.
Yeah.
Things like that. And I'm like, why am I trying to inflate my word count? Yeah. But the second someone points it out to me, I'm like, oh yeah, that doesn't need to be there.
So what's next up for you then? I know that you did tell me that you have written a mainstream thriller, which sounds very exciting. So is that the next project after The Road Ahead?
It's so hard. I've got so many projects going on. The Road Ahead is about to be released. Yeah. And after that, something called Climbing the Ladder, which is potentially going to be a series, which is it's an office romance based around a London-based lesbian magazine. So that's coming out in August. And then Family Ties, which is the mainstream thriller, is coming out in September.
Right, so you've got quite a packed writing schedule. And these are all stuff that you've written sort of recently. Did you have anything sitting in a drawer that you've reworked?
Of everything I work on, I think about half of it is from a drawer, half of it is originally written. The Family Ties, the thriller, has been on and off written for, last 15, 20 years. Carbon date myself a bit. So it's something I've had around absolutely ages, and I've only recently felt like I could actually do anything with it, like after recently sort of learning about how a book is actually, you know, formed, and actually learning some proper editing skills rather than just mashing words onto a page, which is what I'd clearly done when I picked the manuscript up.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through that about 3 or 4 months ago, sent it off to a couple of betas to have a look at, got it back, did some more work on it. That's going to go into copy editing next week. So yeah, that was one that was out of the drawer, but it was out of a very old drawer, so it was quite difficult.
A drawer with a dodgy lock.
There was a good inch thick of dust on that. But I've been writing it over so long as well, like I wrote it a long time ago, but also over many years as well, sort of picking it up and going, oh, I know what I'll do now. So it was all over the place, but coming together and finally being able to sort of do something with it. And I didn't know what POV was back then. Oh, showing and telling was just, you know, just words. So yeah, there was a hell of a lot of work to do with that. So although it was out of the drawer, it might as well have not been, to be honest.
So you've got quite a packed schedule coming up, and does that carry on to the end of the year, or are you giving yourself a little break?
No, it carries on to the end of the year. I've got another release coming out in October, one in November, and then probably take a break for December. Yeah. And then in January
have a month off. Wow, that's quite incredible. And how do you manage to crank out so many words? What's the secret to your prolific writing schedule?
I kind of schedule what I know I can do. So I have a Gantt chart for project scheduling. Ever heard of a Gantt chart before?
I haven't. No.
No. It's basically it's like an Excel spreadsheet, but at the top you put how many weeks there are in the year, and then you do little coloured bars. So, you know, blue for writing, green for editing.
I've actually got one of those because my wife is an accountant, and she set it up for me at the beginning of the year.
There you go, you have a Gantt chart.
I have a Gantt chart, and I'm really pleased with all the different colours. I can't say I'm following it religiously, but I'm really pleased with the colours.
yeah, I mean, I have to say, when I set it up at the start of the year, I did spend a stupid amount of time on the colours, and now I do love them.
You do,
But there's brilliant. You think, yeah, that's green, that means it's done. And, you know, that's pink, that means it's nothing to do with me anymore. But yeah, I started that at the start of the year. It's how I do a lot of project management stuff. So that's how I've always worked. So I know roughly how long it takes me to write a book. I know how long it takes my copy editor to copy edit and my proofreader to proofread. Mm-hmm. So I basically scheduled all that in at the start of the year. So I think I'll have 7 books out this year.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. So
yeah.
Yeah. Well done. Puts me to shame.
Yeah, well, to be honest, some of them are out of the drawer, so that does help a lot when you know that you only have to spend 3 weeks on something rather than that would
be a help. My drawers are empty. I haven't got any drawers. There you go. That's the issue. And talking about books and audiobooks, so I know that you brought out Huntress. Are you going to plan to bring out other books in audio too?
Yeah, Bring Holly Home's currently in production, so that should be around August that comes out. I don't listen to audiobooks. My wife listens to them all the time, so yeah, there's always some strange voice floating around our house, which is quite disconcerting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I've never really been into it, but I realise it's quite a good growing market, and quite a few people are asking me about different ones, and Bring Holly Home has been the sort of like success of this year that people want. And because Flight and Grounded are still with Ilford Publishing, they still have the rights. I can't produce an audiobook of that. So really, it was mergers and acquisitions or Bring Holly Home, and Bring Holly Home won. So.
Okay. So when's that due out then? Do you know?
I think August, maybe September sometime.
Okay. Yeah, because obviously a lot of listeners to this podcast are big audio fans. So looking forward to that. And as you said earlier, you're appearing at ElCon, which I have been talking about on this podcast for a while. It's the European Literary Lesbian Fiction Conference, I think. And that's in Bristol in August. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be my first convention. So that's quite exciting. I'm on a couple of panels. I think all my panels I'm on, I'm with you, actually.
I think we might be. Yeah, I think we might be.
I know I'm on a panel about tropes, and I think...
We definitely are, then. There you go.
Oh, there you go. And I'm chairing the one on collaborations.
So. Oh, there you go, and I'm chairing the one on tropes.
Oh, there we go.
So we're going to know each other very well by the end of ElCon, which will be great. And I'm looking forward to it, because I think the first convention I went to was the Diva Literary Festival last year, and that was a lot of fun. So, it'd be good. And final question, if you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
Well, I'm going to have to use writers in a broad sense and use the screenwriter, Aaron Sorkin, mm-hmm. Who wrote The Newsroom, West Wing, and most recently, Molly Bloom, the movie, which was fantastic. I just love his fantastic dialogue. It's just mind-blowing. Yeah. I think when you sort of, you know, anything that he's written, it's just so incredibly done. And it's one of those people, you know, when you look at someone, you go, I could not do that. I could not do that as well as you do that. I very much get that with his dialogue. And I think the other one would be Agatha Christie, because she just creates such fascinating characters. And she's a fascinating character in her own right, but, you know, everyone knows of her characters. And, you know, even today we're still sort of producing new renditions of her stories and of her characters. I just think they're fantastic.
No, and I think they're two great choices. I'm a big West Wing fan, so I haven't seen anything else he's written, but I've heard about them. And obviously Agatha Christie, that's a great choice. So, well, this has been fantastic, Amanda. Thank you so much for taking the time. And so the next book out, as we said, will be The Road Ahead. And where can people find out more about you?
My website is www.aeradley.com, and all the information will be on there, as well as links to all of my books and my mailing list, which is the first place you'll hear about anything new and upcoming.
Okay, so everyone rush off and sign up for Amanda's mailing list. Well, thank you again, and good luck with all the upcoming stuff.
That's great. Thanks so much.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club. So this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you'd like to have a read of any of my books, the London series, the All I Want series, Nothing to Lose, The Long Weekend, or Twice in a Lifetime, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, iTunes, Bella, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, or any of the other digital outlets. I'm frankly everywhere, so you can't miss me. And if you would like a free lesbian romance, do sign up to my mailing list, where I will email you every couple of weeks letting you know what I'm doing. And it's a great novella that you get in return. So that's at www.clairelydon.co.uk. Thanks so much to Denise for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. And join me next month when I'll be interviewing Aussie author Cheyenne Blue, who's just released a brilliant new book, a tennis book called Code of Conduct. So I'll be speaking to her all about that. See you then.